Welcome to episode 28 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. In something of a rare opportunity, I managed to get away for a few days this last weekend. It was a leisurely trip to see Innie's sister and her boyfriend, but I thought it would be nice to dig out my old Mamiya camera for a change. Today's show, then, follows me a few days earlier, as I was thinking about what needed to go in the bag, and more importantly, what didn't, on what I told myself most definitely wasn't going to turn into a photography trip. So welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 28. Contrary to popular belief, or what a lot of you might think, I don't always carry a camera everywhere I go. When I go out with friends, when I go to sort of private parties run by family, I don't always take a camera. There is this assumption that just because I'm a photographer, I want to be on duty 24/7, always taking pictures. Now, don't get me wrong, I love taking pictures. Of course, it's what I do all day, every day. That's fine, but sometimes, you know, you like to have a bit of a break. And let's not forget, if you count the camera on your phone in your pocket, well then technically you've always got a camera with you. This weekend I am going away with my girlfriend to see her sister and her sister's boyfriend. We're going to have a few days away, and it is, I suppose, a much needed break. Nothing long, nothing, no great plans, just having a few days away just to relax. But of course, the photographer in me immediately thinks, I don't want to be without a camera, because you never know. I have an option of what I can take. I could, of course, take my SLR, I could take my Nikons, I could take some lenses, tripods, all the rest of it. But of course, I don't want to make it into a photography trip. That's not the point. Now, what I have in front of me here, let's get this from my cupboard, is an Olympus Trip 35 camera. Now, a lot of you may be aware of these, and a lot of you may not. I've got several of these cameras, and I think I'm right in saying that they were produced somewhere in between the late 60s to the mid 80s. And they're a very simple point and shoot camera. I won't yak on about all the details of it, because you can find out for yourself, but I will link in the show notes. I'm not going to be taking that camera. Several reasons, one of which is I haven't used it a lot, and last time I used it I wasn't quite happy with the results, and it wasn't necessarily a fault of the camera. I think it's just a case that I needed to do a few more tests and just be happy with using the camera. So that was my second option. It could be my SLR or it could be something like that. I've got my Canon G9, much battered and kicked around, but it still works and I love it. I may well take that just in case. But essentially, that is not what I'm thinking. What I am thinking, as I go to my cupboard here, remove a couple of bags, it's always nice to take, or to have a camera. If you're going to take a camera and you're thinking purely just that you might want to take some nice pictures while you're out and about, it's always nice to have something a little bit different. Now, those of you that listened to the podcast a couple of weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, where I was at the end of a very busy week and I was just going out for a walk, and I had spoken about, I'd spoken about wanting to go for a walk and try out my Mamiya 7 Mark II film camera, which I hadn't used for a pretty long time. And it's such a lovely camera, I thought, do you know what, I'm going to take it this weekend. So my setup, such as it is, and I'm talking as if I'm going preparing for a shoot, and of course I must remind myself I'm not. What I have here is a fairly old canvas bag, excuse me, and this is made by a company which I've always struggled with the name. I think our American chums would refer to them as Domke. I tend to think of it as Domk. I'm not sure what the correct pronunciation is. The spelling is D-O-M-K-E. Lovely bags, nice strong canvas, kind of It's kind of, how can I explain it? It doesn't necessarily look like a camera bag because of the canvas, because of the shape. This particular model, it's quite an old model now. I've got the tabs under the lid here, made in the USA. It's an F4AF Pro system. Now, these bags, the Domk or Domke bags, were designed with photojournalists in mind, I believe. So they are rugged, designed to be knocked around. The inside of the bag is the usual thing you might expect. You have tear-away Velcro patches, but it's modular, so you lift the whole of these blocks out, and you put your cameras in, what have you. Now, just because I am telling myself I don't want to be bogged down in photography for the weekend, that is no reason to that's no reason to be careless and think, well, I won't take a camera bag. As I've mentioned many times before, what is the point of having any value of camera, whether it's, I don't know, sort of £30 or £4,000, if you're not going to protect it? So this bag, it's small. Lengthwise, as you look at it front on, it's probably no more than about 30 centimeters by about 20 deep, and then from ground to top, it's probably about 20 again, so it's really compact. And I actually bought this bag with this particular camera in mind. So, for those of you that don't know, this camera, Mamiya 7 Mark II, it's a rangefinder camera, which is a nice design. A lot of people think of rangefinders, they think of Leicas. People like Cartier-Bresson made the Leica famous for his photojournalism work, very subtle, very quick, quiet to use. This camera, as I've mentioned in the past, essentially the focusing, it's manual focus, and to focus the camera, you align two images through the viewfinder, and once those two are aligned, that is your picture in focus. Now, what I would like to do is display is explain to you how quiet this camera is. Oh, excuse me for one second. I have my lovely office cat here. Hello, matey. If you haven't heard of office cat, where have you guys been? Office cat sits and watches me do my thing while I'm editing and on the computer and what have you. And you will have seen pictures and updates on Facebook and what have you. True to style, he's now, I think the expression is, buggered off. So there we go. So let's get back to talking about cameras. you can never rely on animals, can you? Kids and animals, don't work with them. So the Mamiya 7, it kind of works a bit like an SLR insofar as the size of it, the grip is fairly similar. It's quite lightweight for what it is. This particular model, the 7 Mark II, is a medium format camera. It runs on a single battery, and it takes 120 roll film. Now, this particular camera, from memory, crikey, I haven't used it for so long. I think I get 10 frames on a roll. So, in this day and age, when we're used to shooting on digital, hundreds and hundreds of pictures on a memory card. This week, in fact, I've just ordered two 8 gig SanDisk memory cards for an event that I've got coming up next weekend, where I'm going to be shooting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures. That's another topic, another conversation. But this is nice just to get back to good old basics. This camera, I was just about to say, I was tr going to try to illustrate to you how quiet this camera is. And then, of course, I realized that because I've not used it for so long, the battery's dead. I can't explain how quiet it is other than just pressing the shutter button here. And if you can hear this, I'll put it up to the microphone. If you can hear that, is literally as loud as the shutter release is. I mean, it hasn't tripped the shutter because the battery's not in there, but that is basically it. So it's super quiet, really nice camera for street photography. It's quite unobtrusive, what have you. I've got on here a, what is it? It's an 80 millimeter lens. Now, bear in mind that 80mm on medium format does not translate exactly across to what we would have traditionally thought of in terms of 35mm camera terms, and equally with digital cameras, because of the different sensor sizes, whether you're on full frame, three quarter, whatever it is, it doesn't quite translate. But from memory, an 80mm on this camera in 35mm terms was, oh crikey, that is, I think it was around about a 50mm lens, because this the 80mm was always kind of one of the what we would call the standard lens for this camera. I've also got in the bag, excuse me, here, and I'll take this with me because, you know, it's a nice lens and it stays in the bag. I've also got a 43mm super wide angle lens, which is so sharp, it is unreal. It's a lovely lens, but because it's so wide, what I have in here, and I made a little sort of container in here, and it's all wrapped in bubble wrap, you have an additional sort of rangefinder, which this camera has a hot shoe for a flash, in exactly the same way that your DSLR does, or traditionally your 35mm camera does. So all I'm doing is just sliding that this viewfinder into the hot shoe. That sits there, and it's actually got a little, I'd forgotten this, it's actually got a, what do we call it, a spirit level in the top. That's handy. You learn something new every day. But essentially what you're doing is, because of the angle and it's so extreme, you actually frame up with this this additional viewfinder for various reasons. Maybe I'll sort of do a bit more, explain about this a little bit more later, another time. And it also has an adjustment here so that you can adjust for the diopter as well. If your eyes, for example, my eyes will be different to someone else's, stronger, weaker, what have you. Anyway, that is just another little accessory, which is always, you know, it goes with that lens. So what I do is I always leave it in its box, in the case, and that'll be going with me. Now, what else can I tell you? I don't want to bog down too much about this particular camera, because I can maybe do a separate post about why I love this camera so much in the future. As usual, there is a clear filter on the front of this lens to protect it, and believe me, you don't want to break these lenses because they are expensive to repair or replace, even though film cameras, like you wouldn't believe, are losing their value. This is actually one of the few cameras that appears to be keeping its value. So what I've got here is a 58mm thread size skylight filter on the front, and you've heard me talking about filters in the past, explaining why would you want to have a filter on the front all the time versus not. You will probably recall a particular conversation I had with my good friend Matt. He maintains that if you're spending all this money on good glass, why would you want to have any sort of distortion on the front by putting a filter on there? I'm not going to say, you probably picked up on what I was thinking versus him. I'm not going to say too much about this other than I would rather have to replace a £20-30 filter than a goodness knows how many £100 bill to replace the front element of a lens. Let's leave that there. But this camera, it's basically, it has its light meter inbuilt, which is essentially what the battery is for. I can still wind on as if there was a film in there, but it won't trip the shutter because it's all tied in. You need the battery so that it'll sort of ties in and will release the shutter. But you've got your essentially aperture priority on here, and then you've got manual, but rather than being like a LED or LCD rather readout, it's a traditional, and I can probably sort of, you can probably hear this. Oops, can you hear this maybe? That's just like a dial wheel on the top, and essentially what you do, you've got a little button and you release that, you lift it up and around, and you can set your ISO traditionally, and you can set your shutter speed manually. So it goes from a bulb setting, which is for exposure times as long as you might want, then 4 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second, a half, and from there it goes all the way up to 500th of a second. Now, of course, we're used to anything up to 8,000th of a second now, so this is not, you know, it's a different breed of camera. It's a different era as well, but it's quite far removed in many ways from what we're all used to with our DSLRs. One of the other great things that it has on here is exposure compensation. I never really used to use that so much as a technical feature in the past. I use it all the time with my DSLR cameras, but that didn't tend to get used so much. One feature that it does have on here is a multiple exposure function, and it's basically a little switch that comes across, very unassuming, and all that does is, I think I'm right in saying, it releases the film sprockets so that the film can't advance when you move the arm to advance it. So that's when you get your multiple exposures, sort of 2, 3, 4, however many shots on a single frame, and then you put the switch across and you wind the film on as normal and carry on. Simple strap on the side. It has a sync cable spot for the flash if you want off camera flash, and it's got on the side here a thing for a cable release, traditional cable release, which allows you to step away from the camera, and this is my cable release here, and it's basically a plunger so that you're not touching the camera, physically touching it, so there's no camera shake if the camera's on a tripod, what have you. Of course, what I tend to use now, and those of you that remember the shots that I was doing, I used it all the time, and I know I've had different scenarios, whether it's been photographing the marina at night or in the snow at the beginning of the year. I just use a self timer, 2 or 5 seconds, you release the shutter, step back, 2 or 5 seconds, whatever, later the camera releases. This is just the traditional way of doing it. It's lovely, great way to work. So I've got basically camera, two lenses, shutter release cable, and that is essentially it. This bag always has a little card here, which is essentially a cheat card for, I used to do a lot of nighttime photography on film, and this basically talks about what's called reciprocity failure. Essentially, when you start to get into long exposures, things like 6, 8, 10, 12 seconds, an hour, you know, sort of however many minutes, film does funny things. So just picking a couple out at random here, say the indicated exposure on the camera was sort of 10 seconds, the actual exposure you'd need to make up for reciprocity failure would be 20 seconds. If it was, as they put very specifically here, 4 minutes and 16 seconds, the actual exposure time would be 21 minutes and 40 seconds. Now, that is invaluable when you're working in the dark or at twilight, and it's very, very good. I've also got in here a Siconic light meter, which is an L358. That I always use for the nighttime shots, but I always leave it in there anyway because I don't tend to use that so much with my DSLRs and all that sort of thing. So that is going to be my camera setup. But of course, the one thing I haven't done as yet, apart from getting a fresh battery, I've got to do that in the morning, I need to get some film. So what I've got here, I've got a couple of tubs. I think I mentioned the other day on another show that I had rediscovered a load of film when I was clearing out a cupboard or something at my mum's house. What I've got here is I have a thing about boxes, I'll admit. I love these plastic sort of crate boxes with the two handles at the side, which you can stack, and they're really good. In this country, we have a company called the Really Useful Box Company, and they make these really sturdy cases, boxes, really nice. In this box, and I sourced it all out the other day, I've basically got two brands, two types of film. When I used to shoot film regular, and this is all old film, if I just pick one at random, and what you get in a pack of film, this is 120 film, of course. You've got, oops, just open this up. Always sounds like sweeties. It's always almost a bit of a disappointment that it's not. One, two, three, four. Yeah, five rolls of film in a plastic box. And I'm not going to be able to shut that because I'm a bit butterfingers today. This, if I can find it on the side, this says process C41. That's the chemistry. November 2003. So, before you start jumping up and down saying that's out of date, you can't use it, this film has been, since before that date, this film has been kept either in a fridge, because putting your film in a fridge in a nice sort of sealed plastic box, what have you, keeps it fresh. You can still use it, just let it cool, warm up a little bit before you use it. A lot of studios, especially back when they were shooting lots of film, they'd have a fridge in the corner of their studio or wherever that had their film stored. This is all out of date, but it will be perfectly all right. If you were to get hyper critical, I suppose you would start to, you know, pick up on the colour not being as it was originally intended for this particular film at the time. But frankly, you know, I'm not too worried, because what I'm going to be doing, I'm actually not going to be shooting colour as it happens. I'm not going to take any with me. But if I was, and I will be doing this in the future, I have the facilities to process colour film, what have you. I just need to set it all up. But essentially what I'm wanting to do, process the film, then scan it. So as much as I don't want to be doing, you know, sort of lots of colour correction and what have you, because of the scanning process, I would be colour correcting just like I do with my digital pictures anyway. So, enough of that. This film, I was always a Kodak man when it came to films. I just preferred that it was slightly cooler as opposed to the Fuji, which tended to be, to my eye, a bit warmer, obviously towards the reds and the greens. What I've got here is Kodak Portra 160 NC, N for November, C for Charlie. I assume they still do make this, but they did the NC, which was their natural colour, but then they also did a VC, which was a vivid colour. I always found that a bit too punchy. They also did a tungsten version because, again, before white balances, if you knew you were going to be photographing under tungsten light conditions, which is a very yellowy orange warm condition, this film you'd put in your camera to combat that. If you were to shoot that in daylight, then same with a tungsten white balance on your DSLR, on your digital cameras, everything has a slight blue cast. It can be used very effectively. You can gel lights to get neutral colours for your subject, but the background could be made to go a bit blue for effect. For example, if you've got a really grey sky, it's a bit of a tip for you, I suppose. If you're shooting a portrait outdoors and the sky is white and grey and it's pretty uninteresting, if you set the if you set your camera to the tungsten white balance, but then you gel up a flashlight for your subject accordingly, so that they are essentially, they're a little bit warm, but they're essentially neutral, what you're going to do is get that nice blue, rich blueness in the sky, which will not make it look like it is a blue sky, but it's a, you know, it's a lot more interesting perhaps than grey overcast sky. Anyway, there we go, that's slightly off topic. So I've got the film speeds on this. We've got 100. The NC was always, I used to use 160, ISO 160. and then we've got 400. Now, for this weekend, I'm not so much thinking about colour. I think I mentioned that already. My favourite black and white film was made by Agfa. And it was Agfapan APX whatever. So originally, excuse me, if I was able to use a tripod or hold the camera really steady in bright conditions, I'd use APX 25, which was a super sharp film. There was virtually no grain on it, and I used to develop that in something called Agfa Rodinol, or Rodinol, which is a fine grain film developer, and it was beautiful. They don't make that film anymore, from what I gather, unfortunately. I've got some 35mm rolls in there, as it happens. But what I'm going to do is probably take... The reason I'm thinking black and white is because black and white is so easy to develop. You can do it in sort of just like hand tanks within within a few minutes. So just for ease of use, I think that's what I'm going to do. So bear in mind, I'm not thinking of this as a photography trip, so I'm not going to take loads and loads of film. I'm going to take... bear in mind, I only get 10 shots on a roll. I think I'm going to take, because it's really light, I'm going to take 4 rolls of ISO 100, and I'm going to take 4 rolls of ISO 400. So 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 shots. I reckon I won't even shoot half of that. And in fact, I'm not worried if I don't take any pictures at all, because the whole point is I'm going away for the weekend and just, you know, having a nice time. So I will set that to one side. And that, once I put that in the case, my bag, takes up no room at all, and it's still in its cardboard packaging. Pop that in there, pop the light the lid down, and that weighs virtually nothing. So that's brilliant. That is essentially it, really. One thing I will do is just have a sip of tea, because it's looking out the window, it's raining as it has done all day, and well, I don't know. I like a cup of tea. What can I say? I'm British. So what I'm going to do is, I think that's going to be basically it. I've got a little kind of checklist of all the things that I would want to consider with this, just so that I've got this camera to use if I should want. So thinking about my film, obviously thinking about sort of developing. I've still got some black and white chemistry which I can use, which is really good. And you never know, what I might do actually is, even if I don't take shots over this weekend, I will still be wanting to go out and, as I've mentioned before, go out and use this particular camera. And maybe I'll do a podcast where I'm developing the film, and you can sort of hear the process, because it's still a nice process, and people that have never really processed any film and just want an insight into that, then that might be quite nice. The light meter, I've got on my checklist, that's staying in there, that works, that's fine. It's the battery that I need to change for the camera. I'll do that in the morning. And I'm not going to take a tripod, because that just seems a bit silly, a bit too much. I may end up kicking myself, but do you know what? I'm not going to worry too much. But that the one thing, something actually has reminded me, what I wanted to actually mention to you guys is, it's very easy to get bogged down with equipment and kit, and especially if you're a very keen photographer, whether it's enthusiast or if you're or doing this professionally, it's very easy to think, oh, I'll just take this, that and the other. And before you know it, you end up with a whole camera store of of cameras, lenses, flashes, tripods, all the rest of it. I was thinking about taking a tripod, just a little portable one. I've actually got, let's see if I can remember which one it is. Here we go. I've got this actually, I'm testing this, and I will be writing up a review for it. It's a Manfrotto tripod, and it's one of their new very compact ones. It's designed for video and camera use. It's in their compact range. It's an M for mother, K for king, C for Charlie. So it's MKC3-H01. It means nothing to you probably hearing it now, but I'll link to it in the show notes. It's nice and lightweight, it's compact, but even so, I'm not going to take it. So here's another top tip. If you want to steady your camera, but you don't want to take a tripod, you could take a monopod, a single pole, which is always handy. You see the guys with the big lenses at sporting events, that's often what they're using. But if you don't want to do that, there is a really snazzy kind of DIY thing that you can do. And all you need to do is go to your local hardware store to get the bits, and it'll cost you just a few pounds. If you get a length of string and you get a bolt which is the right thread size to go into the bottom of your camera, and then you get a washer, you can make a device which will steady your camera really easily. So if you imagine you've got the string laid out in front of you, and it wants to be so that it's basically from the ground up to your sort of eye level, or just below your eye level. Imagine that lined out in front of you. You just tie a knot around the washer at one end, or a couple of knots to secure it, and then you tie a knot around the bolt at the other end. You screw the bolt up into the tripod fixture in the bottom of your camera, and then holding your camera, you let the end with the washer just dangle down, and you just put that underneath your foot, okay? So then what you want to do is just lift up the camera so that it makes the string taut. Now, it sounds strange, but try it, because what that does, it actually, because you've got some resistance there, you're actually steadying, it's very strange, but it steadies the camera. And you might be surprised that you get an extra 2 or 3 shutter speeds or f-stops of stability. And it really worked. And that costs you just a couple of pounds, and it's really worth trying. So I'm not going to bother with that, because I'm not thinking about photography, funnily enough, as it sounds, for this weekend. I'm just going to have a nice time away, a few days away, and it's nice to take the Mamiya, because I haven't used it for ages. I love the camera, and it's just something I've been wanting to get out of the bag again for a while. So, so I'm all set. Mamiya 7 Mark II, and a bit of a fun weekend. As I record this, I have no idea what pictures, if any, might be produced over the weekend in question. But of course, I'll be sharing my follow-up thoughts with you somewhere along the way. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. You can check out The Active Photographer's Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I'll speak to you all very soon.